Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the Wealth Club, and I'm sitting in for Glenn Greenwich just for a moment. This is a regular Tuesday night show with the International Black Summit Talk Radio. I'm Henrietta Byrd, your host for the first Sunday, which is on track, and Glenn will be with us just a moment. The International Black Summit has a network that's available every Sunday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 Central, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. It also provides an event each year, the first weekend in August. This year, the event was held in London, England. The summit event is an event that's attended by people of African descent from all over the world. The International Black Summit Talk Show is a program that keeps that conversation going throughout the year. Each week, we plan a wonderful program for you so that you can interact with some of the facilitators from the International Black Summit, the talk show host, and other people from around the globe. And tonight, we build wealth, and we have wonderful people who share with us things that we need to know about building wealth.
Yes, and tonight we've got Indira Hamilton, who's going to be talking about reverse mortgages, and we're also got Patricia Warner, who's going to be talking about using and highlighting your business plans. This is Glenn Greenwich, and that was Henrietta Byrd out of Chicago bringing the show to you live. We're going to get started with one. Let's start out with the declarations. This is what we normally do. The declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. August 11th, 2009, north, south, east, west, above, and below. With that, we take a moment of silence. Thank you. Tonight, I want to introduce my first guest. She is a brilliant woman from Wells Fargo, Indira Hamilton. And what she's going to be talking about tonight is utilizing reverse mortgages as a technique, as a tool for your financial intelligence. Without any further ado, let me introduce Ms. Indira Hamilton. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Glenn. It's really a pleasure to join you. Hoping that the information we're going to provide is going to be of use to the community. Oftentimes, some programs people do not know where to turn for valid information on this subject of the reverse mortgage, especially the FHA reverse mortgage. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. So let's start out. Would you give us a little background about who you are so the folks get an idea of the kind of knowledge base that you're coming from and what you're providing?
Of course.
You know, okay.
Of course. Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, I'm a reverse mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo. And what that essentially means is that I specialize in providing information and a program, the FHA, that's the Federal Housing Authority Reverse Mortgage Program for seniors at Wells Fargo. It is the only program which I am allowed by the company to participate in because the idea is if one is going to handle a specialty program and one that deals with such intricate information dealing with our seniors, that one needs to really devote all of one's time to that program. So I specialize in this. I've been doing this for about 4 years now. And it also means that I'm certified by Wells Fargo and by the governing body of banks providing reverse mortgages right now in the U.S.
Great. That's excellent. And would you let the folks know who Wells Fargo is as a company?
Of course. You know, I'm going to try to make this part brief because, you know, we can easily become overwhelmed with all the statistics and so on. But, you know, in this current market, people are pretty much trying to figure out where they should do business, who are the companies with strengths, you know, where should they be turning to and feeling at least confident that their finances are in good hands. You know, Fortune magazine has ranked Wells Fargo 14th in the world's most admired companies just this year, even amid the financial crisis. Barron's has also rated us among the 25 most respected companies in the world just this year as well. And I think more apropos of the program we are participating, it is one of the top 50 companies for diversity, ranked by Diversity Inc. magazine just March of this year. So that's a statistic of which I'm particularly proud. You know, it says that the company is going in the right direction in reaching out to our diverse markets and making sure that those markets are not overlooked. You know, in terms of, like you said, we should keep this brief because in terms of financial assets and all that, that's great, but I think people need to know that the company they're working with is solid, it's respected, and it's going to be around there for them if they choose to, you know, to put their finances in its hands.
And the fact that they're highly rated and aren't going anywhere in this particular economic times where we've seen banks go out of business and get bought out by other banks. Wells Fargo is actually buying up other companies and has had a substantial track record in terms of being conservative, and so they're going to be around for a bit.
Precisely.
Okay, great. So let's get into the meat of the conversation then. And what's the history of reverse mortgage? How did it kind of get a start, and what was it, the idea behind it?
Okay. I think that's a great place to start because, you know, the misconception is that this whole, you know, reverse mortgage is really a relatively new phenomenon. It actually is not. What's happening now is there's a lot more advertising. I know many people I talk to, we've seen the ads on television and so on. That's actually a misconception. The concept of reverse mortgages have been around since the 60s, believe it or not.
Really? Okay.
Exactly. Yes, it's been around almost for as long as I have, if not longer. But I'm telling my age now. But essentially, the concept of a reverse mortgage has been around since the 60s. But reverse mortgages, as we know them today, they have really come a long way. You know, as you said, got into the history of this program. Reverse mortgages as we know them today, really they evolved from an event that took place in the late 80s, I would say 1987 to 1988. And what really happened then was that the Federal Housing Authority, you know, referred to and short as the FHA, of course, what they decided to do then is to begin regulating these reverse mortgages. So the program as we know it today has really grown out of the regulation that started taking place in the late 80s.
Okay.
So to take it from there, today, what most banks that, or not all banks that are providing an FHA-insured reverse mortgage are really following guidelines which have been laid down and stipulated by Housing and Urban Development, which, of course, monitors mortgages under its Federal Housing Authority arm.
Well, let me ask you a question then. Can you have a reverse mortgage that's not FHA-backed?
Yes, as a matter of fact, one could, but one couldn't have that at Wells Fargo.
No.
Yes,
understand.
But one could, of course. Go ahead.
They do have programs that exist, but your program is specifically using the regulations of the FHA.
Correct.
In terms
Absolutely.
Of administering it.
Which
makes it a little safer, I would imagine, right?
Well, what happens is, you know, the FHA actually insures the reverse mortgage. Now, there are entities out there which would be may opt to do reverse mortgages which are not regulated by the FHA. In that case, those entities would be free to construct and to structure those loans according to their own guidelines. Of course, they would still be following, banking regulations, but they would not necessarily be following the guidelines imposed upon the banks doing the FHA reverse mortgages. You know, later on, as I'm sure you will ask me to do, we will go into the mechanics of the program, and then we'll begin to see how it is that the FHA insurance is actually very beneficial to a potential borrower.
Okay. Now, what kind of let's demystify some of the myths. So, what were the myths that were associated with the program when it first started, as opposed to what it is today?
Okay. We can do that. You know, we can also pick myths for the next 30 minutes and still not have enough time. But, you know, if you don't mind, I would like to go in briefly into the structure of the program and how it works.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
You know, just so people who are trying to grasp what it is we're talking about can see where I'm coming from with the myths.
Okay.
First of all, this whole reverse mortgage, it's not very complicated. Look, if I can understand it, I think, not to be trite, but if I can understand it, I think most people can wrap their minds around it. Here is what a reverse mortgage actually is. It is a home equity loan for a person who is 62 or older who owns and occupies their home. So that's all it is. It's a way for a person who is 62 or older to convert some of their home's equity into cash. So in a nutshell, that's what a reverse mortgage is. Now, here is why it's called a reverse mortgage. If you're 62 or older and you own and occupy that home, you can do this quote-unquote reverse mortgage, which is a type of home equity loan, except the borrower is not required to make payments on a monthly basis the way they would with a conventional loan. That's why it's called reverse, because if you have a conventional mortgage, you're paying the bank on a monthly basis. In this case, you're not paying the bank, but the bank is actually paying you. And therein the term reverse mortgage. This is also one of the things that people tend to misunderstand. The bank does not necessarily pay you on a monthly basis. So here I would have a 62-year-old owner and occupying the home. They qualify for a reverse, and whatever amount of money they qualify for would be dispersed to them in one of three or four different ways, which they choose as a disbursement option.
Okay.
So pretty much that's how the reverse work. You get X amount of money as a home equity loan out of the home. One can cash out that money if they choose to. So, Glenn, let's say your parents or grandparents or my grandparents decided to do this.
Okay.
They can do a reverse mortgage. They would be entitled to, let's pick a number for the sake of our discussion. Let's say $200,000. My grandparents can opt to withdraw that entire $200,000 at one time. Or they can opt to have a traditional home equity line of credit where they're accessing their funds on pretty much on an as-needed basis, okay? And the third option they would have, this is the one most people have heard about most. That's called the monthly income check. So they can opt to have a monthly income stream. And, Glenn, you've heard of that one, haven't you?
The monthly income stream, right.
That's the one most people have heard about. So, yes, it is true one can have a monthly income stream, but one can also opt to have either a cash out, or they can have a credit line, or they can have a monthly income stream, or they can combine their different options. And I'm going to pause at this point because, you know, I don't want to overload our listeners with too many intricate details, but essentially I remember them by saying you have three C's option. You can cash out, you can have a credit line, or you can have a check. And that's pretty much the way the program works, and it is repaid anytime the borrower is no longer occupying the home.
So at the person's transition, or if they decide to sell the home, at that point the loan would have to be repaid.
That is correct. So, okay. You know, I like to describe this and to give a scenario. For instance, let's say my grandparents did a loan and they decided they wanted to sell their home, move to warmer climes. Anytime they sell that home, that lien would be repaid. That mortgage would be repaid at the closing table, similar to any other mortgage. You know, a reverse mortgage really follows the same rules as conventional mortgages, as, you know, regular purchase mortgages. If my grandparents sell that home, obviously the new homeowner would not want to have their lien remaining on their home. So if they sell, the loan is repaid at that time. Or eventually when they pass on, when their estate is being settled, that loan will be repaid at that time as well, either through the sale of the home or through refinancing by the person who is now the new homeowner, whoever their heirs are. And I think this is a good segue to, before I move on, I will also mention, for instance, if a person is moving into, say, an assisted living facility, that could also be something that triggers the repayment of the loan. Because if you're out of the house for 12 consecutive months, and there is no likelihood that you will be returning, then it's no longer considered your primary residence. And this loan is only on the person's primary residence. So once they have moved on in one of any of a different number of ways, the loan becomes due at that time.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, go ahead.
So there's something about that whole primary conversation, so it's definitely got to be primary in order to make it work.
Yes, it has to be a primary residence. Now, that's not to say that a person cannot have another proper property, like an investment home or a second home or vacation home. It's just that a reverse loan can only be on the person's primary residence.
Okay.
It can only be. But, you know, I want to kind of come back to the question you originally asked, which what are some of the myths associated with reverse?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I wanted to give you that outline so when we come back to the myths, now we can understand, you know, how some of these myths are unfounded. You know, the most common one I get in the field, typically the first thing I would get from a client or a potential client or their kids is, isn't that the loan where the bank takes away the title of the home? And yes, that is the most inaccurate piece of information that is floating around regarding reverse mortgages. So to make it very clear, the bank does not take title to the home, or to phrase it another way, the bank does not go on the deed of the property. The title of the property remains in the name of the homeowner. The deed is unchanged. The borrower is free to leave that home to whomever they deem worthy. They can leave it to a charity, to their kids. Whatever they put in that will, that's where that home is going. It's their home to do with as they see fit. The bank has no say in that. They're simply doing a mortgage, which is exactly like the mortgage they did at the time when they might have purchased the home.
Okay.
So that's the number. That's really the number one myth out there surrounding reverse. The second one would be that if you use up all the funds that are made available to you, that the bank will foreclose on you. Not true. Absolutely not true. If my grandparents did this loan and they had a $200,000 line of credit, when they have used it up, absolutely nothing happens. The loan is not considered due and payable until such time as they do not live there any longer. So the two biggest myths surrounding reverse.
But isn't there an interest associated with that $200,000 that they've expended?
Of course there is. Of course there is. This is a mortgage. Just like any other mortgage, there is an interest rate being charged on the money that's withdrawn. If they have a credit line, there is no interest on the unused portion of the credit line. The interest is only accrued on the portion of the money that they have chosen to withdraw. So, yes, there is interest, but it is typical of any other type of mortgage. And I think in this particular forum, we might not have enough time to go into the different types of rates available, but I will say that a senior who is looking into doing reverse mortgages today would have a choice of doing an adjustable or a fixed rate mortgage. So the choice is theirs, and whoever they're working with should be able to go through each scenario with them to let them know what's available, and at that point, the family makes a decision as to what makes more sense for that particular family. You know, in my career doing this, I would say each reverse mortgage is as different as the client involved.
Okay, very good. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, are there particular scenarios that actually do not fit?
You mean that might not be right for a particular person?
Yes. What kind of scenarios would that be?
Okay. There is one other thing I need to mention before we move on. As I should have mentioned before, because this is an FHA insured program, there is mandatory counseling required for any person who is looking to do a reverse mortgage. In other words, there is a HUD-appointed counselor, and the bank is not allowed to be involved in that process. So let's say my grandparents, again, I'm using my grandparents, let's say they were looking into doing this, what would happen is their loan officer, in this case, if they're working with me, I would provide five different counselors in the area that they can go in person, or five different telephone counselors that they can call and do their counseling on the telephone. It's one-on-one, it's confidential, and the counselor's role as a HUD-appointed counselor would be to go through that reverse mortgage program with them from soup to nuts and make sure that they understand, what the program is all about. And until that counseling has been completed and a certificate is issued, that reverse mortgage potential client is unable to apply for a reverse mortgage with a bank doing an FHA-insured reverse mortgage. So that's one of the safety measures and one of the measures that have been put into place by HUD to make sure that people are getting information before they actually launch into doing a reverse mortgage.
Yeah, so it's really for the protection of the homeowner to make
precisely.
Sure that they understand, and they've got two different conversations about it so that they need to be clear and clarified. Excellent.
Precisely. And not only that, at least one of the conversations that they're having is from a disinterested third party, because obviously the HUD counselor is not affiliated with the lender. So it is an additional security that's put in there, and it is a good thing. And as a loan officer and a reverse mortgage specialist myself, I feel very comfortable that this is being done, because it makes sure that by the time my client has decided that this is for them, that I know that they've spoken to a disinterested party and they've really contemplated this and received the information from at least two different sources. But I don't want to overlook your question about scenarios that don't fit. We wouldn't want you to think I'm evading that question.
No.
but seriously, my role is to provide all the information I can say. My role is to provide all the information and say, this is a reverse mortgage. This is how it works. This is what you will get. This is what it will cost you. This is what you will pay in interest. And there are cases where people would look at the overall picture and decide that this may not be something that that they're willing to do right now. This is not true for everyone, but let's say someone who's planning to remain in the home for a very short period of time.
Okay.
Say a person is remaining in the home for 2 to 3 years, and after that they may be moving on and buying another property. That person may decide that instead of going through the process of doing a reverse mortgage right now, that they'd rather not do it and then just go straight into that purchase, because for the short period that they're going to be in that home, they might not feel that they've benefited from the process of doing a reverse mortgage. So for short-term homeowners, this may not be a good option. Apart from that, one of the requirements of reverse is that the bank that's doing the reverse, we have to make sure that all the liens against the property are clear. And that can either be the borrower clearing them from their own funds or from the proceeds of the reverse. Let's say my grandparents have a first mortgage on their home for
$100,000. Okay.
If they can access $200,000 on the reverse, we have to be able to pay off that first mortgage with $100,000 and the balance of the funds are available to them. Now, in the current marketplace, what we're finding is many people do have very high mortgages,
right.
And in looking at the reverse as an option, it does not work for them because there's simply not enough funds available on the reverse mortgage to cover those first mortgages. So for those people, it just simply does not work, not because someone would not be willing to do it, but because of the rules of the program, we're not able to clear those liens, and in that case, they would not be able to proceed.
Okay, so let me just do a recap. So folks out there who are listening, if you've got a lien that's bigger than the money that's available for your reverse mortgage, then the process basically can't be done. It has to be able to clear out whatever outstanding liens that exist. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Now, the clearing the lien doesn't necessarily have to be from the reverse funds. For instance, if my grandparents can only get $200 from the reverse and their mortgage is $220, they may have additional resources that can help them to get that mortgage down to $200, and then they can do the reverse clearing the other $20. In that case, we can proceed, and what that does for them is it eliminates that monthly mortgage payment for them. You know, Glenn, one of the things I ought to have mentioned also, you know, remember we said this mortgage only gets repaid when the person leaves the home?
Right.
I should really mention, because many people take advantage of this option, which is they can actually make prepayments as they go, and there is no penalty for doing so.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
So if they choose to make a partial payment or a full payment at any time, the bank has to accept that payment without charging them a penalty for doing so.
Very good. So they can actually get out of it by doing a lump sum or a partial payment.
Or a partial. That is absolutely correct, yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Now, we've got about 3 minutes left.
Right. And you have two people with questions, Glenn.
Okay. We're going to take, we'll take 347-325. Go ahead, you're on the air live. Go ahead, please.
My name is Jerry, and I want to ask about a question about, I heard about toxic mortgage. Could you explain that to me, please?
Glenn, do you want me to take that?
Yeah, go ahead and take it.
Okay.
Jerry, it's a little off the topic, but.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay, you know what? What I was going to say to Jeremy is, you know, I would not want to speak and give him misinformation on a subject with which even some experts have some difficulty explaining. I think greater experts than myself have been struggling to explain what a toxic mortgage is. With my specialty in reverse, I would not be able to address that with any amount of comfort on my part that I would be giving Jeremy the information he's looking for. You know, if he'd like to leave a number with you, Glenn, I'd be happy to point him in the right direction.
Well, matter of fact, why don't we do this here? We've got about 2 minutes left. If you hold on, Jerry, we'll get back to you and we're actually going to provide you some information. So go ahead and, Indira, and provide your contact information before the time runs out. So I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of you.
Of course, of course. I can be reached. My direct number is 718-730-6069. And I'll repeat that, you know, in case people didn't have their pencils ready. I am at the Wells Fargo office in New York City. But we can pretty much talk to anyone and provide whatever information they'd like. And, again, my number is 718-730-6069 is my direct number. If you'd like to send me an email, it would be my name, indira.hamilton@wellsfargo.com.
Very good, very good, very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. And what we're going to do now, let's see, we've got just about a minute left. We didn't say how long the process actually takes. How long does the reverse mortgage process actually take to complete? Obviously, you have to do the counseling, and that
mm-hmm.
has to be factored into that whole process.
Of course, but you know, from you know, as I said, every reverse mortgage is as different from the last one as the person involved. But I'm going to give a generalization. From the time the person actually does the application, which would be after they have completed the counseling, At Wells, we tend to try to close our loans between 30 to 40 days. And there is one exception, you know, we should mention, even if a person is behind on their first mortgage, they can still apply to see if a reverse mortgage will work for them to help get rid of that first mortgage that they're behind on. In those cases, I do have the option of fast-tracking that file because of the financial hardship involved. So I would say 30 to 40 days on average, barring any unforeseen circumstances. And if there is great dire financial need, then I do have the option of asking for that file to be fast-tracked.
Okay, very good, very good. This is the International Black Summit Wealth Club. This is Indira Hamilton, a specialist from Wells Fargo. We've been discussing. Hello. And we've been discussing reverse mortgages and how to use them, how to dispel the myths associated with them, and getting some real facts. Obviously, in this half an hour, there probably are some more specifics that can be dealt with, but you've got. And there, would you give your contact information again?
Of course. That's 718-730-6069 would be my direct number. And via email, it would be my name, INDIRA.Hamilton, H-A-M-I-L-T-O-N, at wellsfargo.com.
Very good. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, listen, I want to thank you for being my guest on the show. If anybody has any questions out there specific to reverse mortgage, we're certainly you can email me or you can email the show, and we'll make sure that Indira gets that information. Thanks again for being on the show, Indira.
Thank you so much, Glenn. It was a pleasure.
You're very welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network Wealth Club. This comes to you live the second and the fourth Tuesday of the month. We've got quite a lineup tonight. We've got Ms. Patricia Warner coming on to you in a couple minutes, but I wanted to just give you a little rundown in terms of what the shows that we have here on the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. On the first Sunday of the month, we've got On Track with Henrietta Byrd. She's also managing the switchboard for us tonight. She's out of Chicago, Illinois, and her show is On Track. On the second Sunday, we have Let's Celebrate with Jakaysha Comp out of Compton, L.A. Jakaysha Showers is Let's Celebrate and Let's Celebrate. Well, On Track, as you heard, On Track is about looking and being, putting yourself back on track if you've gotten yourself off track. Let's Celebrate is let's celebrate the wins and the exciting things that we're up to, making things happen. It's an opportunity for people to come and have a joyous time. The third Sunday of the month is called Vision Works, and that's where we look at what people are up to and their visions and just connecting with them to see what they're doing and what they're up to. And that is hosted by Clara DeVaughn's, Clara Lyons DeVaughn. And she heads up that show out of Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And then the fourth Sunday of the month is Man of the Month. I also host that show. And I look to bring some male energy into the show and also just let folks know what the men are doing out there in the community. And when we have a fifth Sunday, we usually have what they call is our distinctions. So that's who we are. I am having a little technical difficulty from time to time with my mic, but we're going to bring Patricia Warner, who really is an expert in setting up your business. She does some work, leads courses for Webo, for those in New York. That's a workshop in business, is it orientation?
Opportunity.
Opportunity. Thank you. Thank you, Patricia. And those are some excellent workshops because they take you soup to nuts in terms of what you need to start a business. And, of course, one of the foundations of starting any business is going to be a business plan. So without any further ado, please welcome to the show Patricia Warner. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. I really appreciate the opportunity you have given me to speak to your audience. It's such a pleasure being on the show with you tonight.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome, my dear. And let's start off. So let the folks know a little bit something about you. I mentioned that you lead programs at Weibo, but that's one of many workshops that you actually lead. So
right.
Could you tell the folks, give them a little background of who they're talking to?
Okay. Well, of course, everyone knows my name. I'm Patricia Warner. I am very passionate about business, as you know, Glenn.
Yeah.
And I usually or almost approach business from a holistic point of view because I believe everything we do is actually connected to everything else. I am the president and CEO of Covenant 7 Incorporation, which I founded in 2006. I, as you mentioned, volunteer for Weibo, Workshop in Business Opportunity. Weibo is an organization that twice a year has 16-week workshops for entrepreneurs and small how to run successful businesses. And I work the Harlem site for them. I am the coordinator for the Harlem site. I also conduct courses for New York City Department of Small Business Services. And I instruct in the areas of business planning, entrepreneurship boot camp, and I teach in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, and in Queens. And hopefully this year I'll be teaching in Manhattan as well.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you. Now, give us a little idea of your company and what you provide before we jump into the business plans.
Okay. Covenant 7 Incorporated is a small company at this point. Hopefully, we expect it to get larger. We write business plans and marketing plans, which are actually separate from the entire business plan. We also prepare financial projections for business owners, and these are also separate from the entire business plan. And the reason why I have to explain the separation is because a business plan, a marketing plan, excuse me, and financial projections are an integral part of the business plan. So sometimes there are people who may just want to get a marketing plan done or may just want to get financial projections done, and we can accommodate them. We also coach in business development in all areas of business, and we offer consulting services in management, marketing, and human resources. We conduct workshops in various business areas, as you know, and we work with for-profit and non-profit organizations.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So let's get to the heart of the matter. So why are business plans important to a business?
Well, a business plan is so important, and it's so sad sometimes when so many business owners do not recognize the importance of a business plan. For that reason, I believe 50% of businesses fail within the first year of starting business in the United States, and in the second year, 80% of those that are left, they fail also. So it's a dismal analysis. It's really, really bad. A business plan is the roadmap for the success of the business. No matter what we are doing, whether we are cooking, whether we are traveling, we need a plan, we need a roadmap, we need something to guide us. And it's no different when we start in a business. We need guidance. Without a plan, the business actually has no direction, and it's been set up for failure. Many people, I'm sure most of the people who are listening, have heard the saying, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Absolutely.
The business, of course, must have a really intimate relationship with the business finances. The owner must know exactly how much growth is anticipated. They must know how much revenue must be earned in a specific period of time. They have to understand how to control expenses. Most importantly, they must know how to price effectively. Most people price themselves out of business. They either price too high or too low. They must know how to manage employees so they can build a loyal team. And there's so much more. The business plan actually helps to guide the owner in all of these areas. and it actually shows how to help to overcome anticipated difficulties. It's necessary, it's needed, it's a must-have.
Excellent, okay. So really the business plan is the framework or like the backbone of the business, the possibility of the business, the actual
yes.
expansion possibilities of the business.
Yes, I would recommend that anybody out there who's planning to start a business, who has an idea, who has a vision, a dream, and they believe that they have some wonderful skills, that they have products they can create or they have services that they can sell, I would recommend to them not to take that first step without without writing a business plan. And if they cannot write a business plan for themselves, they should get someone who can write a business plan to write it for them. It has to be well written. A well-written business plan answers all the questions of the business. In other words, if you were to present that business plan to a bank for a loan or to a non-traditional lender or to an investor, that business plan must answer all the questions that person would have in their mind. The business plan should not have questions hanging, and every section has to be connected to the other section. In other words, if you deciding that you want to market in a certain area because your target market is in New York City, for instance, your projections for marketing must be able to show that it coincides with your marketing area. So you would not be showing you spending $500 for marketing when you're actually marketing in the entire New York City and not in a specific zip code. Or you decide to market in the entire United States, yet your marketing budget is too low to accommodate that. So everything has to be connected, and we have to pay attention. And whatever we say in the business plan, we can't make numbers up. We can't decide it sounds good or it looks good, and we decide to make a number up, because everything that we say must be proven.
So
that is where research comes in.
We can't fly by the seat of our pants, huh?
Sorry. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Can mm-hmm. you develop a business plan for a business that's already in existence or already established?
Oh, of course. There are so many businesses that are existing and established that have never written a plan. They've developed a good customer base, and they believe all is well. And until a crisis or some unexpected event that negatively impacts the business and they're not prepared to respond effectively, then they realize that they have a problem. There are so many stories I've heard out there where people have had businesses for years, and then all of a sudden something happens and they couldn't sustain the business anymore because they weren't paying attention to their cash flow. They had no idea what was needed to run the business. And I always say to my clients or to the people that come to my workshops, if your business isn't growing, it's dying. You can't have a flat line. A flat line in my book means death. So it has to show consistent growth for you to know that you're running a successful business. If you're not running a successful business, you have a hobby. Almost a year ago, Business Week magazine published an article, and it was mostly about the large number of small businesses that were filing for bankruptcy in this current economic climate. And the one thing that the majority of these businesses had in common was they did not write a business plan. So every business, whether it's existing, whether it's an entrepreneur planning to start a business, every business should have a business plan.
Let me ask you this. Now, and that business plan should probably be updated from time to time as well.
Exactly. A business plan should not be written in stone. So circumstances change. The environment changes, your market may change, the economy changes, and your business plan should be flexible enough so that adjustments could be made. But the one thing that I must say about a business plan is that if it's well written, you do not have to rewrite it. It's all about making adjustments.
Okay, so and these adjustments should be made, what, every 2 or 3 years or longer?
Well, you know, if you want to have a successful business, you need to look at your numbers at least every month. Some people look at their numbers every week. Some people look at their numbers every day, depending on what they're doing. But the bottom line is you have to pay close attention, and it doesn't make sense that you wait for a year or 2 years to look back and figure out, you know, what have I done? You need to pay attention and move, and pay, as the business grows as the days go by, as the weeks go by, you need to look back, and you need to look back and say, well, because what a business plan does is that it says to you, for example, you need to make $50,000 for the first 6 months. Let's say you're projecting those numbers every month for the first 6 months. If in the middle of the first month you've just made, you're up to $10,000, something is wrong because you're projecting $60,000 and you should be up to at least $30,000 by the middle of the month. So if you're not paying attention, the end of the month would come by, maybe you made $20,000, you're not paying attention, you figure, well, you know, I was able to pay my bills, but you're not sustaining the growth that you projected. So when you look at the business, you wonder, well, you know, after 5 years, after 10 years, why are some businesses so stagnant? Why are they not growing? Because they never had a plan to follow. They have no idea where they're going. They're like running around in circles with no direction.
Excellent, excellent. This is the International Black Summit Wealth Club, and we've got Patricia T. Warner, and she is giving us some insight into the leverage and the use of the power of a business plan. How do you utilize it to expand your business? You talk about finances. What's the importance of a break-even analysis? Because you mentioned cash flow, and I think one of the things that a lot of businesses don't pay a lot of attention to is understanding how much product they need to turn a profit. So would you give us some insight into that?
Well, I'd be happy to. A break-even analysis. Glenn, there's so many businesses today, especially small businesses. We're talking about the mom and pop. We're talking about the new entrepreneur on the block who have no idea what a break-even analysis is. If you were to walk up to some of these business owners and ask them, what is your break-even point? They have no clue what that is. And that is not good, because break-even is so important. Break-even is actually when sales are equal to expenses. And in order for you to make sure sales are equal to expenses, you must first know what your expenses are. And there are so many that are not paying attention to the expenses. I always say to my clients, as soon as you decide to become a business owner, you don't spend money, you invest money. So when you go to Staples and you buy a ream of paper, a box of paper clips, you go to the gas station and you put gas in your car, you're running to meet a client or whatever, you didn't spend money, you invested money. And every dime that you invested, you have to get a return on it. So in order for you to get a return on your investment, you must understand where break-even is. How much do you have to sell in order to cover all your expenses? That is where you break-even. So if you have no clue where that is, you may be operating below break-even. Because some people support their businesses from other sources, and that is a no-no. The business must be able to support itself. If it's not supporting itself, you do not have a business. You have a hobby.
Okay.
It's the first break-even is the first step in understanding how to price. If the business owner knows what must be sold to cover all the expenses, then that business owner understands the first step in pricing the products or services that are being sold.
Okay.
And pricing, Glenn, is a totally different topic because there's so many criteria involved in pricing, not just break even, but it's the first step.
Yeah, but break even is an understanding of X amount of products manufactured or sold or something to cover the minimal expense of the year. Pretty much.
All the month. You can do your break even for the month. You decide how many products can you sell in the month, or how much services can you render in the month, and you then based on that, you figure based on the expenses that I have to cover for this month, I need to either increase the number that I'm selling if at a certain price, if I cannot increase my price, or increase the amount of services that I'm going to be doing, which means you have to market more aggressively to bring more customers in. That is why I say every aspect of the plan is connected to every piece everywhere else, everything. Because when you start talking about break-even, you can't talk about break-even and pricing without talking about marketing.
Gotcha. Well, let's move. That's a perfect segue into what. Give us some background and insight into what are the what are the objectives, what are the techniques or the specifics of a marketing plan? What do we need to be mindful of when we're preparing that marketing plan, understanding that it ties back to this whole cost and break-even analysis?
Right. Well, a marketing plan, first of all, cannot be written without a lot of research, and there's so many people that shy away from doing research. They just don't want to take the time to do it, and if you can't do it for yourself, hire someone who can or find someone to help you who'll be able to do the research for you. But you cannot write a marketing plan without a lot of research. The plan includes a description of your target market. And your target market is specifically that group of people who needs your product or your services. Everybody's now your customer. If you decide to spend your marketing dollars on everybody, you're wasting your marketing dollars. You have to figure exactly who your target is. And in your marketing plan, you're going to describe your target by discussing the demographics of that target. Demographics, of course, as we know, includes their age, their education, their sex, their marital status, their income, you know, that type of stuff. Then you have the psychographics, which is almost like the lifestyle, what people are doing, when they're doing it. For example, somebody may decide, you know, today I like basketball today. So everything that has to do with basketball, they're interested in it. So the people who are selling basketball stuff, for want of another word, whether it's balls or nets or whatever it is, or sneakers or gym clothes or whatever, those people can market to the people who are in a basketball mode. Those same people may be in a tennis mode 6 months later. So we have to pay attention to the psychographics of our target. What are they doing? What are they thinking? Why are they doing what they're doing? Then we have to think about technographics. And technographics is simply where we make assumptions that our target, depending on what we're selling and how and where we're selling it, we make assumptions that our target has an internet, has access to a computer, has a bank account where they can go online and purchase with a credit card or a bank card, or they have a checking account, and we make those assumptions based on the technology that's available out there, and we're assuming that our target has access to that technology. So we need to research to figure out if those people that we're selling to, if we're selling e-commerce and we're only selling on the internet, then we need to know that the people we're targeting can buy on the internet, and we're not targeting, let's say, most of the people who are over age 65, for instance. Most of those people are not as internet savvy as people who are in their teens or 20s or 30s or even 40s. So we need to understand exactly who we're targeting and why we're targeting. And then we also have to pay attention to geographics. Where is our target located? It's important to know where our target live, in what area, what's going on in that area, how do we get to them, are they able to get to us? It's important to understand those aspects. The marketing plan also includes a summary and an explanation of the different media that is used to get the word out. Now, we have old media, which includes magazines and newspapers, and we have new media. And to some extent, television is included in old media to some extent. It's also included in new media, depending on how you're using it. But new media include the internet, webcasts, podcasts, you know, and all those modern technology, all those things that has been used to reach the audience quickly, whether on the cell phone or with the iPod or whatever it is that it's been used. So we need to explain in our business plan exactly how we're going to get the word out and who we're going to get the word out to. The marketing plan also includes a SWOT analysis, which is simply an in-depth explanation of the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats that the business face. So all that is just a brief synopsis of what's in a marketing plan.
Wow, wow. I love that you said you're describing the different markets. So one was the techno, one was the site. Give us those four areas again. There was the demographics and the psychographics.
Psychographics, technographics.
Technographics.
And geographics.
And the geographics.
Right.
So all of those have to be part of your thinking and your game plan and your strategy.
For your target market, yeah.
For your target market. Excellent.
That's right.
Excellent. Wow, this is some great stuff. Good. This is excellent. Do you have any idea, Clara, you wanted to say something?
No, not at the moment.
Okay. Is there any particular psychological reason why people aren't using business plans as the backbone of their business expansion?
I wish I could just sit here and just give you the right answer, you know, because I don't know what the right answer is, because there's so many different reasons. I can tell you that from my experiences, people do not understand the importance of business plan. That's one reason. They just don't understand the importance. Another reason is that people make a decision not to invest in a plan. People do that. Some people know that, you know, I need a plan, but I can't afford to get one written, so I think I could get by without one. And there's some people that some consultants, actually, I've heard somebody on one occasion at least, and maybe on more than one occasion, say that or recommend that a formal plan is not necessary. And I totally agree with that one, because without a plan, we're just wanderers. We have no sense of direction. So I will always, I'm passionate about business. And I believe that you got to plan everything. I mean, why take a trip that you didn't plan? You need to know exactly, you know, what route you're taking, how much gas, how soon you're going to stop for gas, and you have enough money to buy gas on your way to your destination, on your way back home. I mean, it has to be planned. So why start a business without a plan? If you invite your friends over for dinner, you want to plan your menu. You're not going to decide to cook something and then you go to your refrigerator or your cupboard and it's not there. You're going to plan and you're going to decide, okay, let me go and get what I need. Let me make sure I have it in enough quantities. It's all about planning. Life is about planning. And so many of us go through life in our normal living, not outside of business, without planning. We do so much stuff that we didn't plan to do, and we end up in so much trouble. So business is no different. You have to plan. You must have a business plan. So a plan, as like we mentioned before, it mustn't be written in stone. You can't write a plan that cannot be changed, because it has to be adjusted as circumstances change. And like I said before, if you have a good plan, you don't ever have to rewrite it. All you have to do is to make adjustments. So I can't tell you what people's reasons are. Everybody would have a different reason. If you were to sit down and speak to a group of 20 people and you were to say to them, write down why, you know, if these are people who decide they don't want a plan, and you would say, write down why you decide not to have a business plan, you may get 20 different reasons.
Okay.
You know, so, but I think that what we need to understand, whatever our reasons for not wanting a business plan is, what we need to understand is that it's necessary to have one, and understand why it's necessary to have a plan.
You know, the more I listen to you, the more I understand that the business plan is probably the only thing that's secondary to that product idea.
Yes.
You know. Because you've got to have a great product idea, but without the business plan,
right?
You know, who's going
right.
to know about it?
Right, and it, and the product idea it actually comes first, because once you have your product or your service idea, then you must do a little research to see if there's a need for it in the marketplace. Now, once you understand that, yes, people would buy my product, people would buy my service. Now, your very next step is to create a business plan.
Okay. So it's really the product, establish the need for it, and then
right.
the very next thing is the business plan.
That's
how
right.
How you gonna make it happen? Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Very good. Well, we've got about 2 minutes.
Wow.
So,
that was quick.
Well, time flies when you're having fun, huh?
That's right. That's right.
Before you go, I just want to make sure let's give your information in terms of contact information, phone numbers, emails, all the things
okay.
so they can get
okay.
a hold of you.
My telephone number is 917-833-4860.
Okay.
That is 917-833-4860. And I can be reached by email at patwarner, P-A-T-W-A-R-N-E-R, at covenant7, C-O-V, like in Victor, E-N-A-N-T, the number 7.com. patwarner at covenant7.com. And my website is www.covenant7.com.
And don't you have a blog? What's your blog? Is it at the website?
Yeah, it's at the website.
Okay, so listeners, make sure that you check out the website and Pat's got a blog. What is your blog feature? What is
Well, I have to admit that I haven't recently updated my blog because I've been traveling. I've been very busy teaching and running around. But I have some information on it on break even analysis, and there's some other information on it as well.
Okay, beautiful. Yeah. So go to that website. We talked just a little tonight about break even analysis. You can get some more information, and of course, certainly you can hire Ms. Warner. She is available to help and support your business in expanding and growing. So,
Glenn, if I may, Glenn.
Yes, go ahead.
Glenn.
Yes, go ahead.
If I may, very quickly, and I know we're running out of time, but one, I just remembered something, and this is why there's so many people that want to start businesses and do not know what entity to operate under. They do not know if there should be a sole proprietor, if there should be an S corporation, if there should be an LLC, or there should be a C corporation. Now, this is where business plan comes in as well, because sometimes they go to accountants or lawyers, and all due respect to accountants and lawyers, because I have many friends who are in those fields. But sometimes they would advise them to become an LLC or an S or a C or whatever without knowing what their business plan is. And we have to understand that most of these entities are taxed through the owners. So if you decide that you want to make a good amount of money at a certain period, you have to make sure you understand what entity you're operating under, because it's all about how you're taxed.
Okay.
So you cannot decide until you know what your business is going to be doing. So you also need a business plan before you make that decision.
So again, a business plan should be the third step in your setting up an establishing business, because it's important to understand the tax implications, the marketing
right.
strategies, how you're going to get things out, how many units you would have to sell, all of the various things to in order to create profitability from this business. Excellent.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn.
Well, thank you so much. You could stick around if you'd like. We're going to go into the open session, and we're going to have hello? Yeah, we're going to go into the open session, so we're going to be doing that next, and you might want to stick around for that if you've
okay.
got time. If not,
okay.
we understand.
No, I'll stick around for a little bit, and
okay.
you know, it's fine.
Okay, all right, great. Thank you, and thanks again for being on the show. It
Thank
was a
you.
Pleasure having a conversation about how our businesses can be expanded with an effective business plan. And remember, what we talked about was that even if you have a business that's existing or is already established, you can still go back and do a business plan and really take a look at and understanding how the intricate pieces of your business are working. So that's the wealth and the value and the power of a business plan. Okay. All righty. So let's get started on the next segment. So we're going to hear from Clara at 856-264. Go ahead. You're live on the air.
Hi, Glenn. I just want to thank you. I really enjoyed the previous speakers. And I did have one question for Ms. Warner before I did my blurb, which was once you have your business plan together, how do you get it into the hands of people who can help you or assist you with financing?
Okay. Do you want me to answer that, Glenn?
Yes, please.
Okay. It was a little bit garbled because of the connection, but I think what the caller asked is, once you get your business plan together, how do you get it in the hands of people who want to help you with financing? Is that the question?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, like I said, you must have a well-written plan. And I must admit, and it's sad to say, but if you're a startup business, it's very difficult for you to find a bank that would want to sit with you and talk business with you, because banks are in the business of making money. So it's hard pressed for you to find a bank who would want to lend money to a startup if you're a startup. You may have to go to non-traditional lenders. There are many organizations around New York City. Some of them lend in specific areas. So if you're in Queens, you may find an organization in Queens. There is Seedco. I'm sorry. There's Seedco in Manhattan. There is Axion. There is Washington Heights and Inwood Association for people in that area. There's so many different organizations around the city that are non-traditional lenders that you can maybe approach. But they want to make sure that you have a viable plan and you know exactly how much money you need and why you need it.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
Did that answer the question for the caller? I hope it did.
Clara? Oops, sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Clara. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
If you have any questions for Patricia, we've got a we're a little over, but if you have a question, you can press 1 on your phone, and we've got about 20 minutes left of our open segment, so we've got enough time to take a couple questions if you have any. So press 1, and I will see you. Clara, go ahead.
Okay, great. So I just wanted to introduce myself. My name is Clara Lyons, and I'm in the South Jersey area. I have a real estate business. I do residential, commercial, and property management business in South Jersey, California. I also have connections in New York, Atlanta, North Carolina, and Delaware. And it's a really, really great time to purchase for not only first-time home buyers, but investors as well, with the market that we're in currently. And if people would like additional information, there's a program that many people are not aware of. It is a national program where there is still a no down payment, no closing cost mortgage solution to home purchase. And the basic criteria is that you cannot own another property. You don't have to be a first-time home buyer, but you just cannot be on title for another property. So if you own a property and you're going into a new property, by the time you go to settlement, you have to be, you know, that property has to be sold. So there are criteria for existing homeowners as well. If people are interested in speaking with me further about my services and the programs that are available, I can be reached at 856-264-1058, or you can go to my blog, which is www.clarasellshomes.blogspot.com. So thank you, Glenn, for letting me share that.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. 347-494. Do you have any comments, questions, or any business or deals that you'd like to advertise?
No, I'm just listening, and I got a business I'm starting up, and hopefully I'll be contacting Mrs. The Covenant 7.
Okay. And what kind of business is that?
Real estate renovation.
Okay. Well, do you want to put your name out and the number in case you're ready to start getting clients?
No, not right this time. I don't feel
okay.
safe at this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good, very good. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you for listening to the show.
Okay.
And please come back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
347-706, go ahead, please. You're live on the air. Hello? 347-706, you're live on the air. Go ahead. You have a question, concern, comment? Okay. You can be quiet. It's okay. All right, very good. Thank you. And let's see, we also have 347-325. Go ahead, you're live on the air. 347-325. Are you there? Questions, comments, concerns? Business deals? Business strategies? Okay. We've got a couple of quiet listeners out there. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to, we've got a couple minutes left. I'm going to actually tell you, I don't talk about what I do too much. I was looking to speak to Jerry. Jerry was on the line a little earlier, and he asked a question about toxic mortgages. And the first question is, well, what does that really mean? I've been in the mortgage business for a couple of years myself. I do commercial mortgages. And a toxic mortgage, it depends on whose side of the house that you're looking at. You can have a toxic mortgage if you're a homeowner and you have a mortgage that is what they're called upside down. What that means, having it be upside down, means simply that you owe to the bank more money than the house is worth. So that could be construed a toxic mortgage. If I'm a homeowner and I have a piece of property and I owe more than it's worth, then it could be very toxic to me. On the other hand, if you're looking at it from a bank, from a lender standpoint, I may have invested in mortgages and a few mortgages, and now those mortgages are not worth. Let's say, for example, I bought a $100,000 investment. If I'm a banker, it's probably closer to $1 million. So let's use $1 million. So I bought $1 million investment, and I probably paid less than that. Maybe I paid $900,000 for that $1 million worth investment. Now that investment drops to $700,000. So now I've gotten some more because of foreclosures, because of the subprime fiasco, what have you. It's now worth less than what I own. So, again, that's toxic to that lender. So I'm not sure exactly what Jerry was speaking to, but those are some of the things and some of the considerations about a toxic mortgage. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about tonight a little bit is the conversation of cost segregation services and what cost segregation services is, a vehicle to recoup taxes. So if you're a commercial property owner and you've not taken advantage of a cost segregation service, basically, you're leaving money on the table to the tune of 8 to 15% of the value of the building. It's a tax break that you're not taking advantage of. It's not a loophole, and it's not a way of reducing it, but it's something that's available to you. So that's called the cost segregation services. And that's one of the things that I do as well. So I do commercial mortgages, and I also do cost segregation services as a commercial realtor. So that's some of the things that I do. We've got another listener on the line. We've got 603-300. Go ahead, please. You're live on the air. Do you have a question, comment, or concern? No?
No?
Okay.
No, just listening.
You're just listening. Okay, okay, that's fine. We've got a few listeners on there. I'm actually going to use it. We've got about 15 minutes left. I'm going to go back to Patricia Warner, since she's done such a good job on business plans, and find out if there's anything else that she'd like to add or that she can think of that can help to boost the conversation around business plans. Patricia, is there anything else that you'd like to add that you have thought of that you might want to impart with our listeners, since we've got a few
Well, you know, there's so much to talk about with respect to business planning. One of the things I could kind of stress is it's important that the business owner or the entrepreneur who's starting out knows exactly how much startup they need. There's so many times that people go to a bank or an investor and they decide, you know, they pull a number out of the air. I need $50,000. And then they get asked the question, what are you going to do with the $50,000? And they say, well, I'm going to buy some equipment. I'm going to, you know, pay some rent and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there was no proper research, no proper plan put into it. And most times I get turned down because, again, it wasn't well thought out. It wasn't planned. Everything has to be planned. You have to research to know how much rent you're paying, how much rent does the landlord want. Does the landlord want 2 months security, 1 month rent, 2 months security, 2 months rent? How much money are you going to spend to market before you start the business? How much equipment do you need? Are you buying the equipment? Are you leasing it? Are you renting it? Do you need to pay for security? Do you need to set up a security system? All these questions, how much insurance do you need? Do you need to pay an attorney to read your lease or to incorporate you? And by the way, you really do not need an attorney for incorporation because the papers are very simple to fill out. They're on the website. I know in New York State, for instance, you just need to go to the website. You can download the papers or you can do it online, and it's extremely simple, and it's much less expensive to do it yourself. However, if you believe you cannot do it yourself, then, of course, by all means, pay someone to help you. But it's very simple to do. Another thing that business planning does is it actually shows you how and when to hire employees. You cannot decide to hire an employee when you finally realize that you're losing money. Before you start your business plan will show you exactly when you need to hire and who you would need to hire. For instance, do you need to hire a part-timer in the first, you know, after 6 months? Or do you need to hire a full-timer? Do you need to hire two people in 6 months? Do you need to hire one part-timer in 6 months and then after another 6 months turn them into a full-timer? Your business plan actually shows you how you need to hire, when you need to hire. So business planning is so crucial. Every aspect of the business is covered in a business plan. There is no part of the business plan that you won't have access to part of the business that you won't understand and know how to deal with if you have a properly written business plan.
Gotcha, gotcha. So again, as we've been saying pretty much all night, business plan is just crucial to really everything that you're looking to do.
Very, very important. If people would understand how important it is, people would run and get a business plan written. You know, I always say, you know, your business is like your baby. Those of us who have children know how we love our children and how we nurtured them and how we saw them learn to walk and then they were running and then we were, you know, we stopped holding their hands and we watched them run and we allowed them to run to a certain point and they had to stop because we know that they couldn't go any further without us until the time came when we had to really cut and tell them, listen, now you got to go out there on your own. You got to do everything by yourself. You got to take the train by yourself. You got to take the bus by yourself. I could send you to the store by yourself. You got to go to school by yourself, because we teach them, we taught them, we nurtured them. That's what you do with your business. You got to nurture your business. You got to hold it. You got to mold it. You got to really take good care of it until it comes to the point where it can run by itself. How many business owners are afraid to go on vacation? If something happens, they have to be in the hospital for a day. Their business is going to lose money because they have not nurtured that business to operate on its own as an entity. So we really have to really take very good care of our businesses, and the first step is planning how to do it. It starts with a business plan.
Well, you just brought up a very interesting point, because I know I was involved with a business. Two partners were looking to actually sell their business, and one of the things that they didn't have in place was the infrastructure to manage the business. So as the two key employees, one did all of the sales, and then the other one did all of the logistics and the distribution of that particular product that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were looking to sell it, without those two entities there, the business was not worth anywhere near what they had anticipated, because they didn't have the business structure in place for the business to operate.
Exactly.
So part of the business plan would be to orchestrate and structure it in a way so that if the owner is away, that the functions of the business are still up and running.
You should be able to take a month vacation and go to the Mediterranean or to the Far East and enjoy the world, and every day money is going into the business's bank account. That is how you have to structure your business. You can't structure your business that you have to be there 24/7. That's crazy. That's lunacy. You have to be able to, this business has to survive on its own. There are so many businesses that are 100 years old. The owner's bones are dust, but the businesses are still successful. Because they were started in the right way, they were set up in the right way, and they're still going on, and it's still a legacy for that person's children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren. I mean, a business, owning a business is the best thing anyone can do, because it's the only way to get rich. It's the only way to really get rich. I mean, people could say, well, I'll win the lotto. Well, yeah, you and how many people are going to win the lotto? You know, but if you decide that you want to really work hard and sustain an entity that could be independent and that could earn you money and create independence for you, it's owning a business. The business of America is business. That's what America is all about, business. And it's so many opportunities out there. There are opportunities. We walk down the street and there's an opportunity. We read the newspaper. Wow, that's an opportunity. We find out that, you know, there's a million people getting laid off in Detroit or wherever. That might be an opportunity for somebody. Every time you look around, you read the paper, you listen to the news, you watch television, there are opportunities for you. The problem is we do not know how to take advantage of opportunities. Trust me when I tell you. If you sit down and plan, you sit down and you plan strategically, you would know how to put things in place. There are people who have businesses. They figure their businesses are doing well. I don't need a plan. I'm making money. I'm putting money in the bank every month. You know, I have clients. I have customers. But let something happen. Let an event occur that's unexpected, that's going to negatively impact the business. And they do not know how to handle what I call the what-ifs of business. What a plan would show them and explain to them. They're in a lot of trouble. This thing that they were planning to leave for their children and grandchildren to create independence for their descendants, gone in the twinkling of an eye.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Because one of the things that a business plan forces you to do is to think about the unthought avenues or changes,
right,
that you said. You know,
that's right.
We're looking around at an economic downfall that we as a economy, as a country, haven't dealt with before, and a lot of businesses that have been around are now hurting because they haven't been able to recoup.
That's right. Or they're gone. Yeah.
Or they're gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because the policies, they didn't have policies set up that was structured for success. And one thing that I have to say to entrepreneurs, people who are starting out, don't be afraid to start out, because a lot of the businesses that are successful today started in the Great Depression. You know, American Airlines started in the Great Depression. FedEx started in the Great Depression. So it's not about what's going on. It's always about the market. It's not about, you know, when I said the market, I'm talking about people's needs. It's always about people's needs. Look around. What do people need? What do people want? What are they willing to pay for? And it doesn't matter whether there's a Great Depression, whether, you know, the economy is down, whatever it is. Money is still being spent. You walk down Fordham Road in the Bronx, you go down 34th Street in Manhattan, you go Jamaica Avenue in Queens, you go down to the Fulton Mall in Brooklyn, and people are milling around like flies, and they're all spending money. And the economy is bad. So let's get real. No matter what's going on in the economy, the stock market could be down, and all those people that invest in the stock market could be having a lot of problems. But the average Joe on the street still have needs. They're still looking for benefits. They still have problems that they need to be solved. So the entrepreneur, that entrepreneur who's willing to go out there and take that risk, which I call reasonable risk, have a great opportunity to create a successful business.
One of the things that keeps coming back, and I'll actually wrap up with this, is the businesses that are able to thrive in different economic conditions keep their relevance to the,
uh-huh.
to that service, and the business plan is a reference point to keeping yourself relevant.
One of the things that businesses have to understand, and every business, is that cash is king. Okay, that's another expression that most people have heard: cash is king. And if you're going to own a business, it's up to you, the business owner, to make sure that you have a certain amount of cash at your disposal. Because if you don't have a certain amount of cash at your disposal, as you grow your business, you need to have some cash at your disposal, because there are going to be opportunities that's going to come your way, whether for expansion, whatever, that you would not be able to take advantage of if you don't have cash at your disposal. A lot of the people who own real estate in New York City today bought them in the Great Depression, because when people were willing to sell cheap, because they were hurting so badly and they needed money, the people who had money were able to take advantage of what was going on. And they became magnets in real estate for little and next to nothing. This all happened during the Great Depression. So business owners need to let go. Entrepreneurs need to let go of fear. I say to people, there's nothing to be afraid of. Nothing to be afraid of. Go out there, start your businesses, get your business plan. Pay attention to your cash flow. Pay attention to your numbers. Make sure all your ducks in a row, and there's no reason why you can't succeed. Because the only time that you fail is when you fail to try. You fail to try, you will fail. But you got to keep going. You got to believe in this so much that you got to understand that nothing. There's no power that's going to prevent you from getting this business that you know that can be a success. The only person that can stop you is you. So my advice is to go out there, get your business plans written, and get going with these successful businesses, because we need them. The economy needs them. We need them. We need you, business people. So go out there and get busy.
Well, give us your contact information one last time, and then we're going to wrap up. We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, my number is 917-833-4860. 917-833-4860. And my email is patwarner, PatWarner, at covenant7.com. And my website is www.covenant7.com.
Thank you so much, Patricia Warner, the business plan expert, marketing expert, and the helper of the entrepreneurs. So thank you so much for being on the show. This is the International Black Summit Wealth Club. We come on the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. We also have shows on Sunday. On every Sunday, our shows are at 8 p.m. And we're here to provide service to you, to empower you, impact you, and to nurture and take care of you. My name is Glenn Greenidge. I'm the host of the Wealth Club, and I thank you for being with us today, the 11th of August. It's been a pleasure. We've had some great guests, Indira Hamilton talking about reverse mortgages, and Patricia Warner talking about the power of a business plan. So with that, I bid you a good evening, safe travels, and we'll see you the next time. Again, this is the International Black Summit Network, Talk Show Network, and this is the Wealth Club coming to you live. We are transmitting all over the world. We also have, you can also get copies of the Tonight Show. Go to Blog Talk Radio, and you can actually download the information, the podcast or MP3, or listen to it online. Thank you. Good night. We love you and care for you. Peace and blessings. Glenn Greenidge. Good night.
Good night.